And welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. Well, Graham, we've both been involved in online business for some time. But have you ever thought about investing in online business?
Well, I do every day. I mean, just over my shoulder here is a brand that I've created to actually put an AI agent on websites to make them more productive. So yeah, I mean, I'm investing quite a lot. And I think from that point of view, I'm going to really appreciate our guest today. Now, I don't know if I'm going to get your name right, Matt, but your surname is it Rad?
That's it. You got Rad. It in okay. One.
So the Norwegian. The double, if anybody listening to this knows yep. I can butcher any kind of name, but when you've got two A's in there, I just thought Kevin had got it wrong and misspelled it as usual. But basically, no, it's Matt Rad, and you're all the way from Australia. Tell us where.
Sunny Brisbane, which is wow. It's God's country here. You're saying, telling me Yorks is God's country. Well, here in Australia, Brisbane is considered God's country because of the weather. Wow. So it's perfect. 300 days a year of sunshine.
Oh, wow. Wow. You wouldn't get tired of that, Kevin, would you?
Certainly wouldn't. What's an Australian doing? We're recording this. It's 5 p.m. your time. What's an Australian doing working at 5 p.m.?
Well, it's not yet Friday, Kevin. So, you know, normally at 3 o'clock, it's what, beer o'clock in Australia on a Friday. But on a Thursday, it's all right to work at this time.
Yeah. You're a frequent podcast guest, so we've only got high hopes for you. I mean, whether you reach okay. Kevin and Graham's highest sort of appreciation, I don't know. Yeah. But you've been on lots of podcasts. I mean, is that a deliberate strategy to get your message out there? What made you want to do that?
That's a really good question. I really enjoy it. It's really good networking. We are in Australia. It's a long way from anywhere. And I think what happened was after, it goes back to COVID. Yeah. When COVID came, what we do, Liz and I buy and sell websites or online businesses, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in a minute. And it's really interesting. A lot of people started to reach out to us. We're relatively unknown worldwide. And we noticed in COVID, people suddenly started reaching out to us and were jumping on lots of calls like this on Zoom. And it was just so much fun all of a sudden networking with so many fascinating people from around the world. We'd all kind of heard of each other over the years because we buy and sell and we talk a lot about it here in Australia. But it's just we kind of connected up. And from that, I said to Liz, I really enjoy talking to all these people. And then people would invite us to speak on their podcast, and it's just grown from there. So, and it's been a lot of fun, and it is good for business too. In this day and age of AI, and I think building, you know, businesses online, getting on the podcast is a very it's worked really well for us. So that's it's kind of a undiscovered strategy that we found by accident.
You and Liz have your website is or one of your websites is Matt and Liz Rad. com. Yep. So if you follow that and use the what's that word for the weirdness is you don't use and, you use it ampersand or whatever it's called.
Ampersand. No, well, it's the full word and.
Oh, is it the full word? Okay, fine. Yeah. And so from that point of view, you that's how to find Matt, because you might already be intrigued by Matt, you know, the idea of you buying an asset. Now, is it usually a distressed asset? It's something that's gone to or is it something that's doing moderately well and then you take it and make it, you know, really pop?
All of the above, but there's lots of opportunities, obviously, to buy distressed assets, or we call them websites that have been neglected. So they're not really distressed. They've just been neglected, and they're kind of like the diamonds in the rough that we're looking for, that we look for a website that someone hasn't bothered doing much to for the last year or two. And then we buy it at a really good price. We fix it up, renovate it, and we hopefully increase the monetization on there and the revenues. But we also traditionally have always bought very successful websites because often when you want to buy or get into online businesses, absolutely rock, because I'm very passionate about it, because my actual background, Liz and my actual background is we were entrepreneurs when we first met. And we bought and sold good old-fashioned bricks and mortar businesses. Mm. And in particular, we owned manufacturing or wholesale import businesses. We got really good at it. it all sounds glamorous. We did well, but it's super, super hard. It's very, very difficult, particularly as a young entrepreneur. So our story is we had a lot of mentors to help us figure out how to make those businesses really successful. And we got so good at it that we started working for very high net worths here in Australia, buying and selling traditional bricks and mortar businesses, similar to what we'd owned ourselves, because we're obviously experts at it. So particularly manufacturing businesses. But it's always most of your wealth when you own a really good manufacturing or wholesale import business is tied up in a warehouse somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's very unsettling. You're always in debt to the bank. You know, we were close to bankruptcy, if I'm honest about it, multiple times. You know, you send a shipment to overseas. We always wanted to get into America, which we did, or we exported to Germany and America. You know, you don't get any money for 90 days or 180 days. Plus, you're putting stuff on a container. There's a lot of moving parts. So when we discovered the online space, we suddenly realized this is awesome. High cash flows, and we're instantly in America. No borders, nothing. And that's just what we do.
Okay. I want to mine that a little bit more, if I may, Kevin. But one of the things that I wanted to understand is, are you buying the business? Or you said the website. So basically, you know, I've got a website. I've not really looked after it for 10 years or so. Well, I have, but not as well as I'm sure you would. You basically take that off my hands, make it sing. And then if you like, X minus Y equals some kind of split share between you and me. Is that more or less?
No, I buy it outright.
Okay. But what happens to the business in the meantime?
Pardon?
If the business supports a website, if the website is there to publicize a business, what are you buying the business?
No. We're not interested in, we don't touch the business at all. We're not interested in bricks and mortar business. We are buying standalone online businesses that make money in and of themselves. So because of our background, that's why I was explaining our great dislike of traditional bricks and mortar businesses.
Okay, you've made the point now it's online. So basically it's an online business.
That's it, yeah. And so anything online business related except for e-commerce because of the physical inventory aspect.
Okay, so not e-commerce. Okay.
Not e-commerce. So if anyone's listening and you're a beginner in business, I do not recommend for your first online business that you would buy an e-commerce style business because of all the problems that Liz and I had for all those years. Yeah. There's a lot of moving parts to any business that has physical inventory. And that's why to this day, we don't touch retail businesses, nothing like that. All we're buying is standalone online businesses.
Give us an example then, Matt, of the type of website that you know, two or three types of websites that you actually buy.
Okay. So we buy totally unique, very niche passion site businesses. So sites about learning how to play guitar, sites about learning how to play golf or in the golf niche. We own a site about pigeon racing, believe it or not. I'm not into pigeon racing at all. You don't have to be. It's really easy to run them. We buy dog training websites. We've owned lots of sites in the crafting niche. So anything about knitting, sewing, you know, paper artwork, things that have we call them a vertical niche, very, very narrow niche, which in the past.
To consumers, Matt, it's vertical
consumers,
niche.
Yes.
So you're not business to business.
No, not B2B. We do more advanced. Yes, we do B2B because we're very skilled at this and we're good at lead gen. So anything to do with lead gen as well, we absolutely love. In general, what we like is consumer, front-end consumer sites where people are searching online and they're into a very niche topic. They come to your website and typically what they'll do, they'll either click on an ad or they'll take an action of some kind. They'll fill out a call to action, like an opt-in box for more information, or they'll buy an information-style product. So courses, we've sold lots of courses over the years in all sorts of niches. And we absolutely love it because there's no inventory. There's no risk really compared to what we used to do. I'm not saying there's no risk, full stop, if you're listening to this. But for us personally as entrepreneurs used to, you know, spending large sums of money on businesses and in physical inventory, online businesses are very free and easy. They're very, I shouldn't use the word free. Sorry, they're very, I get the American term, what's it? Scrappy. They're light and easy. So if they don't work, we move on to the next one. Easy.
Got you.
So Matt, if you're buying an online business of the type you've described, you're presumably buying one of the key assets there would be an email list.
Oh, that is the gold, Kevin. Awesome question. So that's kind of our big rule. Like that's the icing on the cake rule. If you can get an email list, you're laughing. That is worth way more now than what it was even 12 months ago because of AI. Mm. Yeah, email lists are hugely valuable now, especially in specific niches.
So are the people that you're talking, I mean, given that it's a crafting business, might be yep. somebody's possibly slightly older than the average and so basically saying, oh, I'm out of here now. Matt's offered me, you know, 20 quid, I'm off. You know, yep. I'm going to spend my days in Brisbane, in the Brisbane sun. And then, you know, effectively, yep. Is that the typical kind of negotiation? It's somebody who's probably said, I haven't really been able to make it work myself. Oh, along comes yes. Matt. I've got a reasonable list. I can get myself a decent payday and I'm out of here.
Yep. So there's two kinds. You were asking me before, do we buy, you know, run down ones like that? And I'll give a really good example in a minute of a client of ours that have done that. Yep. But also keep in mind, once you know what you're doing, there are also really, really good online businesses that we pay full price for that are not run down. They're the opposite. They're growing, just like we used to buy traditional businesses. It's just that they're an online business. So we will pay the usual, what's called a 3 or 4 times multiple. So when traditional businesses are sold, anything under a couple of mil is generally sold here in Australia and in America and in England. It's universal. Most businesses realistically sell for what's called a 3 to 4 times multiple. So if it nets 100 grand a year, we'll pay 300 or 400 grand for it. So we will buy online businesses like that any day of the week if they're good and they stack up in due diligence. But our preference and the sweet spot, particularly, and this is what we teach people as well, particularly if you're a beginner, our preference is to buy really nice little neglected niche sites under 50 grand or under 20 grand. Why? Because the risk is so low. You're not forking out hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so a great example, it might help explain everything here, is Nathan and Alexa. They're two young clients of ours. They tried to get ahead here in Australia by doing, you know, Nathan's an electrician. He's trying to get ahead, and his wife Alexa, she was in customer service. They're trying to get ahead by doing the real estate thing. They very quickly realized you max out with the banks after 1 or 2 properties, and it's really difficult, and you need cash flow. So they learnt off us, and so what they do is they do this strategy. They buy multiple websites, fix them up, and they're now laptop lifestylers. And so one of the niches that they discovered, they live on a laptop. They live in Thailand and stuff like that. They don't know anything about gardening, right? But they own a gardening site that's gone really well. So they were looking around in this niche. They're making off that site, you know, a couple of grand a month. So they own multiple sites. So it adds up to a nice monthly income. They were looking around because they had a successful site in the gardening niche. They were looking around actually here in Australia for, oh, what other gardening sites are around? And they found this site buried way down in the Google search engine. No one else had seen it. And they noticed the guy had run it for 14 years. It was about Australian native gardens. And he hadn't touched it. He hadn't blogged on it. So it was just a blog, a standard blog. And they sent him an email and said, hey, notice you haven't touched your website for quite some time. Would you be interested in selling? We're cash buyers. That's what we teach people to say. It's literally just one sentence. That's all it is. That's how we used to buy bricks and mortar businesses too, by the way. And he emailed back and said, sure, I was just going to close it down anyway. I've done nothing with it. $400, it's yours. Just pay for the hosting and the domain name. So they got this website for $400. Now, in spring, we're just- Australian dollars, yeah.
So about 200 quid.
Yeah, 200 quid. Yeah, 200 quid, yes. Yeah, $400 Australian dollars.
That's like a meal out for Kevin. I mean-
Yeah. It's like a tank of petrol in your car. You know, yeah. It's nothing.
Not in my car.
This isn't a get rich quick thing. They had to put some effort into it to fix it up. They got their team onto it. They're not gardeners themselves. They outsource the riders, but they've built that thing up so that now in spring it gets over 80,000 visitors a month. they're making $4,000 a month off that website. So now that's because they know what they're doing and they built it up over time. They've done it with other sites as well. But I think it's a great example of what we say to people is they're the sorts of deals you want to find where, and they're out there. And particularly now with AI, things are about to get, I won't say easier. There's new challenges with AI, but there's lots more opportunities to renovate websites with AI now. That's one thing that AI does particularly well. Yeah. So it's a really exciting time, but there is tricks to it. You know, that AI has made things difficult on in some ways, but it's making it easier in other ways. But those sorts of niche passion sites are very valuable now if you can get a following. So like you said, Kevin, with an email list, because it means advertisers can get directly to the customer base. So the best niches that we've found over the last, we've been doing this since 2008. So since that time, and even in the early days, we found the best niches were, remember in the good old days in our local newspaper stands, there were gardening magazines, crafting magazines, mm-hmm. golfing magazines, guitar magazines, anything to do with sport, all those niches humans still are passionate about, but all the print media has died. So what that traditional advertisers now will come direct to you if you own a website in any of those niches, and there's an opportunity to tell them, look, I've got an email list. You can advertise directly to the target audience. It's not scattergun. So that's where there's lots of value in these very precise niches.
But Matt, when it comes to those websites, and Graham and I, many years ago, joined something called Internet Business Mastery. We learned about
Corey Rudell.
Sorry?
Corey Rudell?
No, Jason Van Orden and Jeremy Franson.
One of the first podcasts, actually. Started about 2006, and Kevin and I came along a few years later. But point is, it's all about internet business marketing.
They were talking about setting up websites, getting affiliate deals, things like that. One of the key things in there was getting a website together that was all about your passion. Mm. It became a passion-led business, but there was an awful lot of you went into the business. The more successful ones that we always saw were the ones where the personality of the owner was built in, and really good the owner knowledge. Became a reasonably well-known figure in the niche. Now, you're taking a website, you're buying it. Quite often, you're buying something that you're not that niche expert in.
Now, yep, very often.
How do you then grow it when you've taken away the person that had the passion in the first place?
It's easy. We do it all the time. And it's a really good question. And it's slightly tricky, but we come from a background where buying bricks and mortar businesses was exactly the same. And we're very used to it. It's just a transition period. And with online businesses, what we do is, say in the instance of Nathan Alexa, that's a really good example, that gardening site, you transition out. So you leave the old owner. Part of the negotiation is, can I leave your persona on the website, even though you're not actively involved anymore and I've bought it off you? And then you add in your persona underneath it, say on the about page, and you become a featured writer on there. And then over time, you transition in and say that you're taking more and more of a role in the business. It's very, very common now. So another really good example, really interesting one that's really surprised us over the years, again, since COVID. In the early days, we used to tell people passion niches, these passion sites that revolve around individuals, are actually good assets to get if you get them at the right price and you can transition over 6 to 12 months, the old owner. So travel blogs can work really, really well. And everyone wants a travel blog because you get to travel the world and get paid for it. And we've got clients that do exactly that. But the other interesting niche is food blogs. And they do typically revolve around someone who's been super passionate, and they build them up and they build a massive following, and it's all about the traffic, and then they just put ads and that's how they monetize them. And we used to actually recommend for beginners, you don't buy food blogs. It's the only kind of blog that we would say just be a bit careful of because of what you're talking about, Kevin. A lot of them did revolve very heavily around the personalities. And then we had one of the world's leading website brokers at one of our boot camps, and he pulled me up on that because he heard me talking about it. He said, "Ah, Matt, can I just correct you there?" And I'm going, "What?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm sitting here. I'm not allowed to tell you the website, but I've just sold a paleo blog for $5 million. And I can tell you I have a list of buyers, cash buyers, and we are selling the most popular food blogs in the 7 and 8 figure. They were doing deals in the tens of millions for food blogs that were heavily run by personalities. So you can transition out of them. It is a little bit trickier, but it's not as difficult. A lot of people worry about that. But in this day and age, as long as the content's good. So the main key that we suggest to people, and if you're listening to this and you're thinking of buying a website and it looks like it's heavily run by an individual, but if it's in a certain niche like Nathan Lex with the gardening, they just hired experts in the gardening niche to write the content. Mm-hmm. And what we've done on their about page now, they have a team of seven on there, seven people. So there was the original owner at the top, and then Nathan put his name in as a pseudonym because he doesn't want to be known as a gardener online, and he's not a gardener. And then there's five other people. They're experts that they hire on places like Upwork. I don't know if your listeners have heard that. So on Upwork now, there's a lot of journalists you can hire. Any niche you can think of, there will be expert writers in that niche. Of course, you've got AI to help write stuff as well. But it's all about creating that persona and the following, and then building an email list and a social media following. And now it's really interesting for the gardening site that some of the names on their about page are pseudonyms, which is fine online. Google's absolutely fine with that, and so are readers. But they get emails and get asked so to speak at industry events, and Nathan has to write back and say, that person's actually not real. It's me." The trade shows have a bit of a laugh about it. But I remember Nathan ringing me the first time it happened. He goes, "Matt, what do I do? They want me to speak at this big gardening show. They think I'm a real person and a gardening expert." And I said, "Mate, you're going to have to go your next person down and get the actual expert to speak there." So that was kind of amusing. But it is, I've got to say, I actually like the challenge of buying those branded passion sites, because we're not talking spending millions on them now, not like the food blogs. We're talking buying little tiny ones for under 10 or 20 grand. It's, and I guess in travel blogging, I've seen travel blogs that are built very much around the personality, but we've helped people purchase those as well. One example is one of our clients, she bought a crochet site recently for $20,000 US. It makes around $1,500 a month US. And that was the biggest concern. This lovely young mum in Idaho or whatever had built this site up. It was completely built around her. But all we did was we just asked the mum when she sold it, "Can you make sure, are we still allowed to use your likeness on the website?" And she said, "Not a problem. And will you still be involved?" And so what we do is our client pays that lovely young mum once a month to write an article. So she got what she wanted. She just wanted to get out of it, and she's had some more kids. But she stays involved, and now our client is one of the new owners of the website, and he's on there and he's transitioning into it more and more. And she's not even a crocheter.
So when one of your customers or clients finds a site and there's a transaction, and let's just say that's done, and now I've got this thing, a website, what do you advise them to do before they even start playing with the website? Presumably you're encouraging them to think before they act.
Very much so. It's a really, really good question. One of the most valuable skills you can learn, in my opinion, please note I'm very, very biased about this because it's been my entire career and I've done things quite differently, and I'm not a fan of real estate. I've always bought and sold businesses, both Liz and I, it's how we've made our money. We think, it's our opinion, one of the most valuable skills you can learn is due diligence. And so before you even buy the site, It's a really good question, Graham. You need to do deep thought, not just around the due diligence, but what are you going to do with the site when you take it over? Do you have the abilities to run it? Do you know what you're doing? Looking for the red flags, all the usual stuff that you would do in due diligence. But due diligence is a key money-making skill. So there's that bit which takes up, so you don't even touch the website at that point. You're just doing due diligence and you're pretty much pre-planning the entire renovation of that website and what you're going to do with it for the next year or two before you even make an offer. And I'm doing that constantly. Every single day, I'm looking at websites or due diligence deals for clients or whatever, and I'm just running it through my head. What would I do if I own that website? How would I fix it up? What team do I need? What expert writers do I need to get on board?
Is that, then, that's all very logical. Is there almost like a hierarchy of, you in terms of your due diligence, and let's just say there's 5 points that you think about, when does it turn to a red flag? Forget it, move on.
Ooh, there's lots of stuff with a red flag, but the two main things that we look at is the profit and the traffic. We live and breathe by that in internet businesses. So it's another really good question. And if you're listening to this, it's probably the main thing you need to take away from this is, and if you own an online business yourself, you should be tracking your profit and your monthly traffic. That's the most important thing. So if the traffic's going up, that's good. If the traffic's going down, that's bad, unless you know what you're doing and you can turn it around. And that's the renovation opportunity there. Similarly with the profit. And we need to verify then, not only do we need to see the profit and traffic, we need to verify that it's real. And luckily, that's a hell of a lot easier than traditional bricks and mortar businesses because everything online is tracked. So use Google Analytics. You actually, what surprised us when you got into this, you know, we used to do due diligence on bricks and mortar business as like forensic accountancy. He's full on trying to figure out what they're doing. With online businesses, people are so friendly and they pretty much have to if they want to sell you the business. They just show you a live video, literally you jump on Zoom and they will show you live into their bank accounts and talking millions of dollars, whatever, all the way down to, you know, a couple of $100 a month, whatever, but no hesitations whatsoever. It's pretty easy with a legitimate seller, that is. Mm. They will, so screenshots is one thing, but screenshots can obviously be faked. But when we first got online and we started with, particularly Americans, they're really friendly. I was shocked at how many times I just, never even met them, talking for less than 5 minutes. Oh, Matt, do you want to see the figures? Yeah, sure. I was going to ask you about that. All right, just wait there. And this is on Skype in those days. They log into the bank account and you can just see the, oh, there's the, you know.
It cut out halfway through though, because it was Skype, wasn't it? So
Because it was Skype, yeah. Yes, to answer the question, they're kind of the main things. And also, Graham, if I can come back to, it was a really smart question you asked, when you actually buy the site, because I did want to let your listeners know the most important step is please don't discount the importance of due diligence. That's the most important step. But when you actually buy the site and take it over, something we teach is we call it the SAS method. So, you know, the British SAS, when they land, you know, it's not all guns blazing and stuff. They land, they stop, they take in the surroundings and they make sure, and then they execute. Yeah, they take action. But for that first part, they take in their surroundings and they look around and they take on board what's going on. We do exactly the same thing with websites. When we take a website on, presumably we've done most of the, we know what we want to do with it through the due diligence. But I say to clients, just let it run for a week or two so we get a feel for it. And what you're watching is the traffic. I want to see who's coming to the site. What's the interactions and am I correct in my, you know, what we're going to do with the renovation strategy? So we just let the site settle for a week or two, sometimes for a month, and then we go in and make the changes and start having, that's the fun part.
One question sits there for me, Matt. If you're passionate about something, you think, I want an online business in this niche. Graham and I were taught back in the day all about starting this from absolutely nothing.
Yep.
Doing it right from scratch. You're talking about buying something.
Yep. Because it's already up and running.
Already up and running. No.
And you know why you would buy it? In certain passion niches, they're very competitive now. And you would struggle if you're a beginner to build it from scratch. It will take you a couple of years. Mm. Whereas if you want to short circuit that time, you just buy it. So that really, that's the question to anyone listening, and for Liz and I as well. We're still big fans of building sites from scratch. Still big fans of that. We teach it. But we also say if it's really smart if you find the right deal to buy a website and fix it up because it's already got all the foundations done. And there's, you know, it's already up and running. So you've got it, but it costs money.
Yeah, you are you and Liz are kind of, it says about you on your website that you're business and website investors, angel investors, yep. leading educators in digital marketing. And I know you've transitioned into that. But do you really have competitors in that? Or is that you've kind of crafted that niche almost? Are there other people, even in Australia, relatively small, big place, but small populace? Yeah.
It's a very small population.
Yeah, I mean, do you find that you've even got, you know, other people doing similar things to yourself?
Yes and no. There's lots of brokers now. So we all, it's interesting, we know all the top brokers. We all start online and they all decided to become brokers because we come from an M&A background. We decided to do the exact opposite. We definitely didn't want to do that. So there's lots of brokers online and that is quite competitive. In what we do in teaching people how to buy and sell online businesses, there's other people. It's not a big niche. Again, following our own advice, we've gone very niche. We're not just general marketers. We also do teach a really cool strategy of helping people start, I guess you call it like digital agencies or doing digital marketing for small businesses because the skill sets are exactly the same. So the skills that you learn, so we specialize in teaching beginners. We're very passionate about it because we made a lot of mistakes in the early days and we're totally self-taught. And so that's why what we do, it's our actual business here in Australia is called eBusiness Institute. We start as a passion thing. We should get asked to speak at real estate investing, believe it or not, at real estate investing, workshops. So a lot of wealth is made here in Australia through real estate. And they'd ask us, the promoters would often ask us to speak right at the end of the weekend or whatever and say, this is Matt and Liz. They do something really weird and different. They have this thing called cash flow businesses because all the real estate guys are always in debt and maxed out to the banks. So we talk how we buy and renovate websites like they buy and renovate real estate. And it was a lot of fun teaching people that. But then we realized the same skills, and we do this ourselves, can be used very effectively building websites for small, local, and now large local businesses. And we've had amazing results with clients. It seems to work really quickly. And we've carved this niche where we now help highly paid white collar professionals get out of their burnt out jobs, particularly after COVID. We noticed there's a lot of burnout out there. A lot of people, you know, we don't target young people. We tend to have 50 plus year olds. That's who we, and we love that market. I'm 50 plus myself and we have kids. We have a lot of people with kids and families and stuff. And it's very difficult for those sorts of people when they're well paid and got a mortgage to just quit their job and live the laptop lifestyle like some of our younger members. So that's what we love teaching people. How can you transition out? And that's the niche we've carved for ourselves.
That makes a huge amount of sense. And why would you buy a business that's already moving rather than start one from scratch? Because you're at least going to have some income coming in.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they've probably they've built up enough, you know, assets to be able to use some of that to purchase a business. So it makes an awful lot of sense. And I have to say, you're an impressive chap.
Thank you.
Listeners probably don't know he's originally from Yorkshire, at least his family is. And So that is obvious in terms of most people listening will realize that that's probably the reason he's successful. Matt, I mean, you met Liz some time ago. Was that was obviously a marriage made in heaven. I mean, what was it that first attracted you to this beautiful woman? I mean, what was it?
It's an amazing story, actually. So we were studying zoology, red kangaroo. I know it's a cliche, but red kangaroos, would you believe? Right. The two of us were destined to be Australia's leading experts in red kangaroos. And what attracted me to Liz, I wish she was here now to hear this. We never used to talk about this publicly, but now we do. And I'm happy to share with you and your listeners because it's such a cool question. You're not going to believe this, but both of us grew up on farms and I'm very hands-on and a rural person. And I really, really back then disliked computers. So at uni, this was in the early days. This was in like the 90s. They had these shocking old big giant computers and lots of hand coding and stuff. And I couldn't stand it. And here's Liz. She was a legend at it. And I saw her and I realized she knows how to build tables on this computer. I couldn't do it. I had no idea. And I thought, oh, and she's beautiful and smart. Right. This is, and exactly what you said, Graham, this is a match made in heaven for me. It doesn't get any better. So that's literally how we met. I asked her to help me build, do stuff on computers. I've had a love-hate relationship with computers ever since. But these days, Liz has taught me. Liz is very technical. She can program stuff. She's really good. She's just naturally very quick thinking, and our daughter's a coder. So that's that side of the family. Me, I'm like a lot of our members who didn't grow up with computers. That's why we love teaching beginners, because I really struggled with it. And these days, though, I love it. I do know how to build. I'm really good at building websites. I can, you know, I love using AI and all that sort of stuff. And I just fully embraced it. But that's our story. That's how we met.
You've obviously got this sort of breadth of empathy for the potential audience that you've got. So the people who might not necessarily be, you know, in this field of online marketing, and then right over to the people who are super hot about it and might have questions that, you know, might be beyond you, Matt, but wouldn't be beyond Liz. So basically it's a nice blend there that makes you quite unique. And I have to say, sadly, we're bringing ourselves towards the end of this podcast because you just have to learn more. But, you know, you've been an absolutely rip-roaring success on the Next 100 Days podcast. Thank you.
Well, Graham, a different look at online business there. Buy something that already exists. I've always thought the only model in online business is you build something from scratch around a passion niche. But Matt's suggesting something very different there.
Yeah, we've found out another business out there, which is actually quite attractive, isn't it? I mean, at the end of the day, you take something that's quite niche. It seems to me that it's business to consumer rather than business to, well, we didn't quite get onto the business to business, but basically it's mainly business consumer passion plays, something that people like doing and therefore they'll search for, therefore they'll engage with in terms of their time. You know, I gardening is something my wife's particularly interested in. And so therefore I know that she'll be looking at things on gardening and so forth. You know, I've been struggling with my grass for years outside, and we put some fertilizer on it earlier in the year and aerated it and so forth, and it's never looked better. So I, you know, as a person that's kind of struggled with that, so not that I'm all over you know gardening sites, but you know, you are alive to that type of advertising and so forth, and so because it's relevant to your life, you're doing part of your life in that bit. You're not going to be crocheting every day, you're not going to be, you know, whatever, doing whatever the particular thing is every day. But that part of your day, there's an intensity about it. And therefore, there is passion and longevity with those people. So, yeah, if you can get that kind of site, then it's worth paying for, presumably, if you've done your due diligence and all the rest of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we never really got on the subject of AI with Matt. Yeah. But these days, it's actually relatively easy to write an article about something and make that article be quite authoritative without knowing that much. You can get some fairly good stuff out of the ChatGPTs of this world. Mm-hmm. Okay, you've got to be aware that they do hallucinate. You've got to check them. But it's not all just hard grind anymore, writing blog posts from scratch.
It wasn't too long ago that we had a conversation with an SEO expert saying that they wouldn't, you know, blend it with real writers as well. And I think because if it's completely AI inspired, over time Google will de-rank you. So basically, I think you'll find that you have to be able to mix it with real stuff as well. And actually, to your point, Kevin, about hallucinations, it does happen. And you know, we found that in with our own product, where you just some not so much hallucinations, but they simply get the thing wrong. So you say, "Hey, hold on a minute, what did you just say? Is this is? Oh, I'm very sorry. It is this." And so you basically you sometimes you have to correct the AI because you know, I mean, these things are going at the speed of light, and so every now and again they'll make errors, weirdly. So therefore you have to sort of be on your game. So if you write in a blog post and you've not checked it, on your head be it. But I would definitely change part of the blog to be part you. And if you can't do that, then you know, hey, come on. You're expecting the blog to do some work for you. And so is anybody just going to read that? Come on, let's be careful. Let's be clear. And if it has more of you in it, more likely that people will read it. So on that bombshell, Kevin, I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.